I'm Tass Mellis of The Starters.
This is Ben Golver with the Open Floor Podcast.
Hi, I'm Kristen Ludlow from NBA Inside Stuff.
I'm OG Anunoby of the Toronto Raptors.
Hey, I'm Elena Donon, and welcome to the Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Double Clutch Podcast. I am literally so excited for today's topic that I'm tempted to jump straight in. But let's do our duty. Let's hit around the association. Now, if you're not already familiar with our show, this is the part of the show where I laugh at some news happening in the real world and in the NBA. So, without further ado, Boris Johnson is still fighting for his right to party. If you haven't seen the TikTok Beastie Boy remix, I do suggest a quick look at my Twitter timeline where I shared it earlier today. But who does actually have the right to have 16 parties? The answer is Phoenix Suns fans. An 11-game win streak, sitting at 41-9 at the time of recording. Chris Paul, the point guard, leading the NBA in assists. Bismack Biyombo, undefeated as a Phoenix Sun, cementing his place in the GOAT debate. Right now, the baskets in Phoenix must feel like they're throwing a basketball into the Grand Canyon in the Grand Canyon State. 16 accidental governmental parties. This feels about as unlikely as Ben Simmons accidentally hitting 16 threes the next time he plays in an NBA game. In other news, Wordle, the five-letter word guessing game that has fascinated people around the world and resulted in others kindly telling their mates that they don't actually care to see their Wordle result on social media, was purchased by a New York-based organization. Despite Wordle being more likely than Randle to play in the All-Star game, rumour has it that Tom Thibodeau will not play Wordle any minutes on account of preferring four-letter words. Indeed, after 51 games played, and with the season plus-minus metrics for the Knicks starters ranging between minus 54 and minus 163, and the leading bench players ranging between plus 43 and plus 199 in the case of Emmanuel Quickley, I can't imagine why anyone would consider changing anything at all. In brighter British basketball news, the Reading Rockets have joined the City of Birmingham Rockets in applying to join the BBL. Presumably, with only one able to actually keep the Rockets name, were they both successful, whichever Rockets team is victorious will be over the moon. Did you see what I did there? Whilst the other will undoubtedly come back down to earth. I'm here all week, but anyway, on with the show. I hope you've laced up your high tops, donned a Hulk Hogan vest, and binge-watched The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, because it's 90s week this week, and there is no one in the world I'd rather have to join me to chat through all things 90s basketball than the one, the only, Sammy the Bench Warmer Gunnell. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, thank you, mate. I was absolutely loving that introduction.
Nice. And so I like to start, when I have a guest on who either hasn't been on or hasn't been on for a long time, I play my inner Cilla Black card from quite a 90s show, actually, thinking about it. So it fits in. What is your name and where do you come from?
Yeah, I am Sammy Gunnell. I am originally from Birmingham. I've been in London for the last 12 years. So, yeah, that is me. I feel like I'm a fake Brummie because I've lost my accent quite a lot. But that's what London does to you sometimes.
It takes your soul, mate, I tell you. One thing I always like to ask as well, because in my opinion, all British basketball fans, no matter whether you're an NBA fan, you're a BBL fan, or you've played, you only play, you don't watch games, whatever it is, you're a superhero in my eyes. And what I enjoy and what I like to find out about, because every superhero has an origin story. Talk to me about your basketball origin story.
Yeah, so I was random. Like, I feel like a lot of British kids went to birthday parties in bowling alleys, either like McDonald's or bowling alleys. And bowling alleys often have arcades connected to them. And I think I must have been probably about 9 years old, probably 9 or 10, when I went to a birthday at Bowling Alley and went into the arcade afterwards, and someone was playing NBA Jam. And obviously it's a great game anyway. It's a bit of a sore spot for me because you obviously beat
I wasn't going to bring that up.
You know, I just thought about it as I mentioned it, and all sorts of rage started filling my heart, and this happy story turned into a sad one.
If it's any consolation, I had to defeat the Knicks to do that as well, because I was the Hornets. So yeah, there's always that
I remember
to take away.
I remember. There is always that, but I'm also a Knicks fan, so I lost twice. But something about the game just drew me in. Obviously just the fact that it's a great game, but also just the kind of whole character and personality of the NBA in the 90s. And, you know, you mentioned Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. It just everywhere I looked seemed to be making NBA references, and it was exciting. And so, you know, sticker books followed, NBA videos followed, Slam magazines followed, like anything I could get my hands on to do with basketball, just followed on from that. So yeah, NBA Jam was where it started, and then it just really snowballed after that.
And I know you played a little bit at junior level. Talk to me about your playing career. Do you still play at all?
I should still play just because I enjoy it. I'm rubbish at it, hence the bench warmer being my nickname, but I do really enjoy it. I did play at a junior level. I played for Birmingham, as well as the great Mike Miller, who we know. And I played there for probably 2 or 3 years. But yeah, always the bench warmer. Was just kind of just happy to be there.
One thing I don't think we've talked a few times about junior playing, and one thing I can't remember if we ever resolved, were you and Mike ever teammates, or were you different ages?
We are the same age, but he came a little bit after I did. So I think I was from, I think, under 13s through to probably under 14s or 15s. And then he was from, I think, under 16s upwards. So, yeah, he showed me a photo and we did have some of the same teammates. But, yeah, sadly, we didn't ever get to play on the same team. That would have been what a connection that would have been.
Yeah, unbelievable. I was trying to imagine the kind of NBA Jam type style of connection you guys would have had in the junior leagues.
Lob City would have been absolutely. Lob City.
When we first met, you were running a absolutely incredible jersey store in Camden Market. Are you... what got you into selling jerseys in the first place? And are you still a collector? I know you've just moved house. How many jerseys made the trip? That sort of thing.
Yeah, great question. So I got into it because I had loads of jerseys that I had from when I was a kid. And I one day just started kind of looking on eBay and seeing if I could flog any of them. And it just came to my attention as I was on eBay that lots of people were listing jerseys, but listing them badly. They were saying things like, you know, Bulls vest. And I'd be like, wow, that's actually a really rare kind of Scottie Pippen jersey from 1992 that not many people have. And so I found myself, instead of just selling everything I had and just being like, I've got rid of it, just buying kind of jerseys that I saw that were going for a great price that I felt like I could flip and get a bit of a profit on. So I started doing that. And then off the back of that, I started running an Instagram account, and that just opened a whole new world where I met, kind of got chatting to collectors in America and everywhere in the world, and just became part of this jersey collecting community. Started being able to get things like game worn jerseys or game issued jerseys, all these things that, you know, you're 12-year-old self would have been going crazy about. So that was lots of fun, and I built that up. But then I think it got to the point where, you know, you mentioned moving house. It got to the point where I just needed to just sell the bits that I had. So really sadly, I don't have really any of the original kind of jerseys that I had at that time. I've only literally got... I've got a... I've got a Kyrie Irving jersey that he wore in a slam photo shoot, and that's really cool. It's very niche. I've got a personalized bench warmer jersey, which is my Clippers jersey, because they were the classic bench warmers of the 90s. And then I've got a Shaquille O'Neal Lakers jersey, which is one of the Nike ones from the late 90s. So I hardly have anything, but the Slam, as we will obviously talk about, that's where I've kind of invested my time and money following my jersey collecting career. But if I still had the money, I would do it. I'm still a great appreciator of the jersey collecting world, and it's probably good that I don't have the money to do it, because I would spend.
Just on the topic, I've specially worn a Vince Carter, North Carolina, for this 90s show. Unbelievable player. Check out the highlights if you are young and did not see North Carolina Vince, because it's worth it. And one thing I have to ask you before we get more into Slam is the similarity of your name, your age, in correspondence with the fame of this other person. How many times in your life have you been asked if you have any relation to Sally Gunnell, Olympic gold medal winner in the 1992 Olympics?
Definitely. In the 90s, particularly the Barcelona Olympics, as you mentioned, yes, people would be asking me a lot, and I felt very proud to carry the Gunnell name. Now it happens very rarely, and it's quite fun, because I'm like, oh, you guys remember Sally Gunnell? And she was a legend. She was a legend at the time. But yeah, there's no relation.
Disappointing. I really hope the answer was going to be she was your mum, auntie, older sister, anything. But no. Okay. Moving swiftly on. One thing I really like about your story is people who are into basketball in this country, if you are not a kind of professional level player, it can feel like your opportunities to work in and around the game of basketball are minuscule. But you've made it happen through your own hard work and chasing a dream and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, both you and I and anyone who got into the game in the 90s, Slam was the biggest deal out there. It was your internet, basically, before the internet. It was your route to information about the sport you loved. So it must be a dream come true for you, right, working for Slam?
Mate, you would not believe. Yeah, it's still sometimes at times I'm like, it feels kind of too good to be true. It's amazing. And I think, again, you know, I made reference before to, you know, your 12-year-old self. But I think as I'm kind of reading through some of them old issues, I think to myself, if I'd known one day I'd be speaking to these people and writing for this magazine, you know, it would have just... I wouldn't have been able to believe it. So it really genuinely is really a dream come true.
And correct any of this is wrong, but my understanding is you kind of started as the archivist, and your role has kind of grown from what I've seen, because I've seen you've actually written stuff in the magazine within that position and stuff like that. So talk to us about where did that opportunity come from in the first place?
So it's the Instagram page that I started that I mentioned earlier. It had the jerseys that I was buying, but it just included anything kind of NBA related, specifically 90s related. And so in doing that, I started putting up pictures of the old Slam magazines I had. And I guess from using particular hashtags, like the editor at the time, Ben Osborne, he commented on one of my pictures, and I was like, no way. Like, I can't believe that, you know, one of the editors is interacting with me. And so Ben Osborne and myself got into some conversations, and then they also were doing a promotion at the time, like not a promotion, but a kind of fan involvement thing where you take pictures of nice basketball courts or basketball hoop and tag it as Slam Hoops. And then they got in touch with me then and said, oh, we'd like to repost one of your Slam Hoops pictures. And I was like, oh man, like I sent them an email and I was like, this is a dream come true. Like this is the greatest day of my life. I can't believe you want to repost my picture. And instead of, I don't know, responding as if I was a real weirdo, they were like, oh, it's quite nice that someone actually you know, likes the fact we're resharing that picture. That's great. And then they did that a couple more times because I was just always taking pictures of basketball hoops and trying to get quirky ones as well. And then basically my wife's sister, so my sister-in-law lives in Washington, D.C., and we were doing a trip over there and we're also going to do a bit of a road trip to New York and Philadelphia. So I just contacted Slam. I was like, hi, I'm the you know, the nutter from the emails who gets excited anytime you repost my pictures. You know, this is a long shot, but I'm coming to New York on this date. Is there any chance I can just come by the office and take some pictures and write some stuff on my blog? I didn't really have much of a blog at the time, but I was willing to create one for that purpose. And so they were up for that. I amazingly, and I went and I met Ben Osborne, and we just kind of just stayed in touch from that, and were just he was always really supportive of anything I was doing, just kind of stayed on their radar. And then sorry if this is a really long story, but I got to the point where I was doing the shop in Camden, as you mentioned, and when that kind of came to a semi kind of natural close, I still had this Instagram account with all these followers that I'd built up who were 90s NBA fans, and I was like, well, what can I do now? I don't have a shop with content that I can just be posting about all the time. And I thought, you know what, let me just go through my Slam collection, because I at least have the first 50 issues, and let me just post about each one and go into it in detail. And so again, Slam saw that, and they saw what I was doing, and they really appreciated it. And some of the staff and former editors started to engage with that. And then just one day I got an email. They were like, we love what you're doing. Let's have a conversation. And so, we spoke on the phone, and they were like, we'd love you to be our official archivist. And so that's how that opportunity started. And then it's just been from there, just kind of pushing certain things, pitching ideas for stories, that's given me the opportunity to write a few bits for them as well. So yeah, it's grown from there. Sorry if that's a really long story.
No, it's amazing. I think you genuinely have one of the coolest and most interesting personal stories in British basketball for that reason. How did it feel the first time you saw your name in the magazine?
Mate, it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. Like, it actually happened previously because I had a relationship with them. I noticed one of their accounts wasn't being used. It was kind of a spin-off account. It's called Old Slam Ads. And I contacted who is now the editor, a guy called Adam Figman. And I said, is there any chance I can run this account for you? And he was like, sure, no problem. He gave me the login and everything. And then the next issue in Noise, which is there, almost like a Twitter feed, they were like, you know, Old Slam Ads is back in action, shout out to Sammy the bench warmer. So that was actually the first time I saw my name in the magazine, and yeah, I was just going absolutely nuts. And then to see it in there in the context of actually being a contributor initially and then listed as the archivist, and then see my name under bits I've written, yeah. Every time I get the magazine, like, you know, they'll send me a copy, and I'll always have this tense feeling as I'm flicking through, like, will they definitely have included it this time? Like, I check it every time to check my name's still at the front and to check they've included whatever I've written. And so I kind of breathe this sigh of relief, because I'm always like, oh, will they still put it in there? So yeah, it's an amazing feeling. It's really great.
And this is a big question now. Where would you rank yourself globally in terms of knowledge of the history of Slam?
Oh, man. You know, there's some guys out there who they know a lot. They know a lot. Globally, that is a big question, Nick. That is a big question. When you take into account all the Slam team and everything else.
I mean, you're going to, let's be honest, you're going to be upper echelon of anyone who's ever read a Slam, but are we talking top 10%, top 5%, you reckon?
I reckon I'm in the top 5% for sure. I reckon I'm in top 5%.
I think you're very humble.
Oh, well, that's very kind. But I think I possibly have one of the most complete collections. Even the publisher, Dennis Page, is probably in second place, which again sounds ridiculous for me to say. I don't think he has every issue. And so I think I have some that he doesn't have. So I definitely think I think I might have one of the top three most complete slam collections in the world. And then in terms of knowledge, yeah, maybe in that top 5%.
And shifting gears a little bit, one thing I couldn't help but notice because it appealed to every single one of my interests, 20 Raw 7, a sort of passion project you're doing on the side. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so there's, again, just, you know, as you mentioned before, being British basketball fans, you connect with other like-minded people in the UK, and a lot of us have had similar experience, especially where we're in a similar age group. And I think for a lot of us, we grew up watching the NBA on Channel 4 during Jordan's second three-peat. And so I contacted a couple guys who engage with quite a lot, one of them being a guy called online, is Gareth Roberts, who works for Project in the Paint, does stuff for like British basketball courts, designs and all that sort of stuff. Also just a huge NBA fan. And then another guy who's got an account called 90s NBA Stuff, a guy called John. And so those are two guys who I speak to quite a lot. And so got in touch with those guys and I was like, why don't we collab and work together? I'm just trying to find all the kind of original material, because I'm sure that between us, we could find a lot of footage from the show and just start putting it out there and documenting it on Instagram and just, just trying to bring back all the memories, because everyone I speak to who are kind of a similar age, everyone just thought it was just such a legendary show and just loved it. So, yeah, it's still in its kind of early stages. There's a lot of big plans we have for that that will hopefully be, you know, coming in the future. So definitely watch this space, because it's only going to get bigger and it's only going to get better.
I have to ask you, one thing I think the Channel 4 coverage did incredibly well that I'm not sure, I remember ITV getting it for a while afterwards, the Right Show Games, and what Channel 4 seemed to do so well, in my opinion, was not only show the highlights, show games, but it was the editorial stuff around it and the stuff that explored the culture around the game that I don't think has been done quite as well since. And shout out to Mo Muncy, of course, at Sky currently leading the charge on that. And I think, again, we're kind of back to a level where it should be. But there was this huge void between the Channel 4 coverage and what we're seeing on Sky now, where you either weren't getting anything at all you'd get is like a game that was on such and such Sky Channel at 4 a.m. not advertised. If you missed it, it was gone. And like, how important was like that cultural element to your interest in the game?
It was everything. I think they got right was they were informative without being patronizing. And I think that's where kind of some of the others that you mentioned got it wrong, you know, doing this stuff like, this is a free throw. It's like a penalty in football. It's not like a penalty in football at all. And, you know, things like that, that were just quite patronizing and assumed you knew absolutely nothing. Whereas the Channel 4 stuff, they educated you about the history of the game and the kind of current state of things without patronizing. And I think it was incredible. And it built our knowledge for us who watched it. It gave us a glimpse into the players' lives, the sort of music they listened to, the kind of that kind of whole sphere of where hip hop and basketball met, and just a deeper understanding of that whole kind of culture. It was just unbelievable. And I think that combined with the fact that it was, you know, Michael Jordan arguably in his prime, was just made it even more engaging. It was amazing.
So if you're watching or listening to this and you're either in your 30s and 40s and want a huge nostalgia hit, or you're young enough to be curious about what us old people go on about so much, check it out, 20 Raw 7 across all the social platforms. So let's get on to talking 90s NBA. I'm going to throw a whole load of topics, debates, quick fire answers at you. I'm just curious to pick your brain. So first one is quite a simple one. These were two marketing behemoths in the 90s. But what I want to know is, who do you have as the better marketing persona? Is it Lil Penny or Grandmama? And do you want to give a little explanation of who those two people are?
Sure. So Lil Penny was a puppet voiced by Chris Rock, who was basically a small version of Anthony Penny Hardaway, who was just every kind of child's favorite player in the kind of early and mid 90s, played for Orlando Magic, which again was everyone's favorite team, just because they were so cool. And then Grandmama was Larry Johnson, who was a big, beefy basketball player built like an American football player, and so just had this kind of hilarious alter ego as a grandma for the Converse adverts, which is great. And I think I'd go Lil Penny, just because Chris Rock, the fact that you could buy toys and of Lil Penny, and you know, it was for the kids, people loved it. And then it's also been that Nike have re-released some of the stuff recently, haven't they? Some Lil Penny merch. So yeah, I reckon as much as I love Grandmama and that was an immense campaign. Gotta love Lil Penny, man.
The other thing about Penny Hardaway that I don't think it's talked about very much is, in the Michael Jordan baseball years, Penny Hardaway was literally Nike's kind of signature guy. He was the most marketable and profitable shoe line for Nike, in that, apart from the Jordan still. But in terms of like guys actually in the NBA, he was the Nike guy. I think that gets forgotten a little bit with the passing of time. And now, the 90s, in my opinion, was the best era for player nicknames. I don't think we're anywhere near as good at them anymore. I'm going to read a whole load of 90s nicknames, and I want you to tell me which of them stand out to you and why. So here we go. We've got the Mailman, the Dream, Plastic Man, the Round Mound of Rebound, Jesus Shuttlesworth, the Big Dog, Big Nasty, the Ukraine Train, the Junkyard Dog, the Pink Panther or the Waiter for Tony Kukoc, Bones, the Mayor, White Chocolate, Thunder, the Glove, the Jet, the Worm, Tractor, the Bigot, the Microwave, Big Smooth, Big Shot Bob, the Answer, Big Game James, Air Jordan, the Human Highlight Film, the Glide, Spud, the Chief, the Admiral, Muggsy, the Diesel, and Big Country. Do any of those in particular stand out to you or have any personal connection for you?
I had to love White Chocolate, man. I think Jason Williams, it was frustrating. I think as a kid, I used to watch the NBA, and obviously, you know, black athletes dominate the NBA, and they played with such finesse. And I think you'd see anytime there were white guys, you had John Stockton, who is obviously an incredible player, but there was nothing really flashy or finesse about him. And I was too young to remember like Pete Maravich. And so to see Jason Williams come and play as a white player with flair and with soul, I guess you could call it. I love Jason Williams, and I still do. And so White Chocolate was definitely a big one. I used to, you know, this is going to be an obscure one, but you mentioned Big Smooth. I think I loved Sam Perkins because he had the same first name as me. But then, remember, he used to just shoot threes. Like, he was a big man shooting threes, which was unusual in the 90s. And he used to shoot them as set shots. He used to keep his feet on the floor. And I just used to love that. I used to think, I loved the Sonics as well. But to see a big man shooting and just to shoot threes as set shots and to be as consistent as he was amazing. And then I think the other one, probably Jesus Shuttlesworth. Loved He Got Game, loved the soundtrack, loved kind of, yeah, everything about what that represented. So yeah, Ray Allen playing Jesus Shuttlesworth in He Got Game, I think that's just, it's iconic, and it's still, you know, it still lives on today. So it's amazing. And I know it's a nickname that he still kind of, you know, endorses and embraces, I should say.
Yeah, it's, if you're younger than a certain age, one thing you might not realize or will be very evident when you look back, and it's just like stats at this point and stuff. In the 90s, it really was the era of the handles being the new dunk, where it was the And One mixtape era, it was the Allen Iverson era, and Jason Williams had that magic that I think you're kind of seeing with Ja Morant now, where it feels like if you miss a game, you've probably missed something really special. And so, yeah, he had a really unique impact when he entered the league. And yeah, that nickname just fitted him so perfectly. I completely agree. One that stood out to me that I'd never even heard before, the Ukraine train for Vitali Potapenko. I'd never heard that before, but I'm now going to use it as often as possible. I may even refer to myself as that. I don't know yet, but it has to be used more. It has to be surfaced, that one.
Are you from the Ukraine?
No, I have no connection at all. Brilliant. But I feel some sympathy for that nation with current events.
Fair enough.
Moving on. One thing I always think, and I don't know if you agree, I studied at UNC, I'm a UNC fan, I'm a big Jordan guy. I have to clarify that to prevent Mike Miller forming a posse and appearing outside my house ready to lynch me. But I always think, and this is as someone with a degree in history, I have to use my historical skills here. I always think the history of the NBA is told from the perspective of Michael Jordan. And what that kind of means is that any team that isn't the Bulls and any players who are not Michael Jordan are a little bit underrated in quite how good they were a lot of the time. Are there any teams in particular for you from that era in the NBA that you think people getting into the game now, whatever, they just won't realise unless they go back and watch them quite how good they were?
Yeah, I think probably a few. I mean, there's a few that were not robbed. They just, you know, didn't have a ring because of that Michael Jordan era. I think I loved the Sonics that grew from probably 93 through till kind of when Sean Kemp left in, I think, 96, 97, 97 it was, wasn't it? When he went to Cleveland. I loved that Sonics team. I thought they were incredible. We talked about Sam Perkins, but obviously had Gary Payton, Sean Kemp, Detlef Schrempf, Dale Ellis, just a number of guys, Nate McMillan, who were just amazing, amazing players. And I think that was a great team that I think should have won it in 94 when they got kicked out. You know, they underestimated the Denver Nuggets and dropped a clanger with that one. But yeah, 96 being their obvious next opportunity, but Michael Jordan. And then I think teams like, maybe this is a bit controversial because they really failed in the playoffs, but I think that Lakers team of the late 90s, where you had a young Kobe, you had Eddie Jones when they played together for a short time, you had Shaquille O'Neal, you had Nick Van Exel. I loved that Laker team. They were young and I think probably a bit hot-headed and failed in the playoffs. I think that there was that notorious kind of Kobe shooting air balls against the Jazz and stuff. So they underachieved, and you know, it wasn't Michael Jordan who stole that from them. It was more their lack of experience. But those are the two that stick out. I think we've got to talk about Barkley as well, like Charles Barkley and the Suns team. You know, kind of probably similar in some senses to the Bulls in that, you know, Charles Barkley was the guy and they had a lot of role players who really did incredible things, you know, off the bench and stuff like that. And then, yeah, Barkley in 93, you know, when that buzzer goes off at the, you know, the end of the finals, you can see how disappointed Barkley was. I think he just knew that was his only chance. And then finally, and these guys did get, you know, what they deserve, but the Houston Rockets, the fact they won back-to-back titles, you know, people forget that in between that Jordan baseball stint, they won championships, but they won it against odds as well. And then for them to win it against the odds in 94 and then come back again in 95 and win a back-to-back championship, they were an incredible team. And, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon, it's amazing to, I'm glad he won a couple of rings, put it that way. So yeah, those are the ones that spring to mind.
I feel obligated to throw in the 90s Knicks, need I say more. But the other team I'd also add to the list is the Trailblazers of the kind of first half of the 90s, who, as I talked about in the intro, because nearly everything you see now is from the Bulls' perspective, most people, all they'll think of is MJ shrugging and the Blazers losing. Most people probably won't even remember that the Blazers got to the finals another time as well. They lost to the Pistons, but most people probably won't even remember that the Blazers got to the finals twice in the 90s. And how good Clyde Drexler was. He just wasn't as good as Michael Jordan, but neither was anyone else in the NBA. Yeah. So,
That's a great shout. And yeah, then the Knicks as well. Like I just love those 90s Knicks and just the bully ball. And also the Knicks of the late 90s. Do you remember they obviously lost to the Spurs in 99, being the eighth seed? It would have been amazing to see them win a title, come in as the eighth seed in the playoffs. But yeah, the Knicks, man. Gotta love the 90s Knicks. The 90s Knicks are the reason why I'm a Knicks fan. So yeah.
Here's a more controversial question that I'm curious about your answer for. If you had to pick one player from the 90s who you think might have been a little bit overrated, who would you pick?
Ooh.
To give you some time to think, I'll give you my answer. This was a player who, for a lot of his career, was kind of discussed as though he was like an all-star, could lead a team, that sort of thing. But he was a power forward who couldn't shoot, wasn't the best rebounder, and couldn't defend the rim. He could score a bit, and that's all he could do, which is the kind of player has kind of been removed from the NBA, basically. And that is Juwan Howard. I always felt like he was a good NBA player, but he was never at the level I felt like he was often grouped into. So he's my, if I had to pick one, overrated 90s star.
Interesting. I wonder if I should go for someone closely related to him then. And maybe it was just that he was like an underachiever. I feel like you know who I'm going to say. Maybe Chris Webber. And it kind of hurts me to say that because I think he got absolutely abused by the Lakers in the early noughties in a way that I don't think was that fair. But I think he's someone who you always felt he was on the brink of, you know, having a breakout season and just never really did. And came in as an exciting rookie and rookie of the year and all those things, but just never really got that breakout season. And then joined his teammate, you know, Juwan Howard in Washington, and you thought, oh, that's what an amazing kind of pairing, but never amounted to anything either. But it's a shame because I like Chris Webber and I love his game, but perhaps more than being underrated, perhaps that he was just more of an underachiever, which is a shame.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And a bit more of an optimistic question and less controversial one. So there's a lot of talk about different styles of play in different eras. And you're banned from saying Sam Perkins for this answer because we've already talked about him. Who are any players from the 90s that you think would be even better if they played today? I'm going to start us off.
Yes, please.
Two players I think would be even better if they played today. One is Kevin Johnson from the Phoenix Suns, who he was just a really all-around incredibly talented guard who I think, without the physicality of the 90s, would be even better. He was very underrated, I think, even at the time. And on a similar note, I also think Rod Strickland, because he played for some of those same Washington teams that underachieved we talked about, often gets overlooked, but really incredibly talented ball handler and distributor, Yeah, really love his game. So there's a couple, I think, that would... Oh, and the other avenue to go down, and I don't want to steal all your answers, but I'm just going to say two other guys, just like the pure shooters who probably should have shot the ball even more like they would now. So I'm thinking of like Glenn Rice, Allen Houston, Pager, those types of guys would be even better today, probably.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you on that. I think... someone like Abdul Rauf was amazing, and obviously his career got cut short for controversial reasons. But
there was a Phil Jackson quote actually saying he was kind of Steph Curry before Steph Curry.
Yeah.
But he played in an era where he wasn't allowed to do that.
Exactly. So I think someone like him would thrive in today's league, and he's kept himself in shape as well. So even watching him play in the big three league is proof of that as well. This is probably a weird one, and I don't know if he would thrive, but I'm just kind of intrigued to see how he would play. But I would love to see Dennis Rodman in today's era, because I know people make comparisons to people like Draymond Green or whoever, but I don't think they're as similar as people say they are, apart from being a little bit outspoken and maybe scrappy and controversial. But I think the way that Dennis Rodman locked people down defensively, even, you know, he was often, you know, in a mismatched height-wise, because he wasn't massive. He was like 6'6 or something, wasn't he? Which is obviously massive, but in basketball terms, against like a Shaquille O'Neal or someone. But yeah, I'd be really interested to see how he'd play guys like LeBron and others who are just straight scorers who just dominate physically. And I think there's part of me that kind of thinks a Rodman would thrive. I know it's a shooter's league, it's a shooter's game, but I think guys who just really drive and attack the basket and get their points in that mid-range or kind of low post, I'd love to see Rodman going up against them. And I feel like he would thrive defensively, at least. Definitely not offensively, but defensively for sure.
Yeah, the other thing about Abdul Rauf I like is that I wish I'd thought of him as my answer, is he was kind of forced out of the NBA because of his outspoken political beliefs, which the world, or the USA in particular, has kind of caught up with now. So he would actually be a kind of valuable voice in that sphere rather than kind of pushed out of the league.
Yeah.
And yeah, Rodman, one of the most switchable defenders that's ever played in the NBA. So yeah, it would be fascinating to watch him. Okay. Believe it or not, we're moving on to an even sillier topic now. Kirk, hit me with
it. Nick, silly nonsense.
Okay, so this is going to be a quick fire round. I'm going to say something. I want you to give me the first person that comes into your head. So I'm going to read out what we're doing here. The 90s is remembered for many incredible trends and fashions. I'm going to reel off a bunch of 90s trends, and I want you to tell me which current personality, so it doesn't have to be a player, could be a coach, could be anyone, from the world of basketball, first comes into your mind when I say each one, as in they're most likely to wear it or do this thing. So my first one is wear a bum bag or a fanny pack, as they're known in America.
Probably Russell Westbrook, I reckon.
Okay. Download MP3s from Napster.
From Napster. Ooh. I don't know. It's got to be one of the older heads who's like still in the game. I feel like someone like a... I feel like someone like a Chris Paul is kind of committed to like old school kind of good solid stuff. And he's kind of the back end of that Napster era. So I'd like to pitch a CP3 on a bit of Napster action.
Consider Jennifer Aniston the one that got away.
Oh mate, that one is wild, absolutely wild. I don't know for that one. That one's too much. Who would you say for that?
JaVale McGee. He seems like the type of, or J.R. Smith, or someone who likes the warped reality in their own mind that was a real possibility at one point. I don't know. Have extreme piercings.
Probably still like someone like a J.R. Smith, or maybe like Iman Shumpert as well. He hasn't got many piercings, but I feel like he's a style guy.
Play Pogs.
Play Pogs.
You know, for anyone young enough, Pogs are cardboard circles that you have to knock over with a plastic circle.
Devin Booker is into all that vintage stuff. I reckon he's got some Pogs lying around, high value ones as well.
Wear those crazy baggy ankle length shorts.
You know, I could imagine someone like Carmelo pulling them back out for old time steak, because he was that 2003 draft class where that was at its peak.
Secretly enjoy the Spice Girls.
I would go like a Klay Thompson, but I feel like he wouldn't keep it a secret. So maybe like a teammate, like of his, like, you know, Draymond Green or someone listens to it and it's quiet times.
And the final one, know all the steps to the Macarena.
You know what? I always think I'm keeping it at the same team, which is probably a bit weird, but I feel like Steph Curry, the fact that he's an absolutely incredible basketball player kind of distracts people from the fact that he's a little bit of a nerd. And so I reckon he's got that unlock.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I can imagine Steph Curry knowing the moves to every dance craze ever. Okay, and moving on to talk about our Discord server. If you are not already a member, do join. It's a fun place to chat hoops all day long. Even at night, whatever floats your boat. We don't discriminate between time of day you want to chat basketball. But things people have been talking about this week, growth of the BBL, two new teams potentially joining have applied. Knees over toes guy and his joint strengthening exercises and their ability to help people play into their late 30s and 40s. And Liz Cambage in the WNBA and her choice words this week about the WNBA pay structure were all topics of conversation. From the Discord server, we also have plenty of questions to get from, to get through, I should say. First off, Mike Miller with a bevy of questions. As a Brum who was part of the Bullets Juniors, what are your thoughts on City of Birmingham Rockets trying to join the BBL and the potential name conflict with my team, who I played for as a junior, the Reading Rockets? He says, I expect you to duel or bare knuckle fight to resolve this.
Well, I think, to be honest, look who's back in the Birmingham team, Hakeem Olajuwon, who played for the Houston Rockets. So I think that's as good an argument in itself for Birmingham carrying that name. In terms of what I think about it, I think it'd be great to see Birmingham have a team again. Obviously, historically, they did. And even the great Nick Nurse came through the Bullets as a coach at one very brief moment. So there's great history there with Birmingham and the BBL. So, yeah, it'd be so good to see them have a team. Yeah, be cool if they'd be called the Rockets as well with Hakeem's involvement.
Personally, just for nostalgia value, I would love for them to be the Bullets and for them to bring back like some of the old players as ambassadors. And because I feel like British basketball doesn't do enough to celebrate its history, but that's just me. With Sammy handling the Slam archive and Joe Pinchin taking the latest cover photo, I'm sure you're aware of that, for Slam Online, how close are we to a full-scale British takeover of the iconic brand?
I don't think we're that close, but I don't think we need to be. I think, you know, Slam in its essence is New York. And I think for it to stay authentically New York, then it's at its core, at its heart, it will have kind of New York or at least US-based kind of writers. And I'm cool with that. I think I'm kind of happy to be involved. It was amazing to see the Bulls cover as well. It's just so cool. It's anytime kind of British guys can. This is the great thing about social media, globalization, everything. You know, anyone can kind of get an opportunity anywhere. And it's just so cool to see that Bulls cover. It's amazing.
Why did you cut your glorious locks?
Is this still Mike Miller asking?
This is all
questions?
Mike Miller.
I thought it was. Why did I cut them? That's an amazing question. I'm so glad that you're so interested in that, Mike. Well,
so for anyone's benefit who can is either listening or watching, Sammy currently has very short hair, but used to have very long hair.
Yeah, that's correct. I just got fed up of it, to be honest with you. I'm going to take it quite profound here. I feel most like myself when I have short hair, and I always had short hair for years and years and years. And when I started doing the basketball stuff with the shop and the pop-up and all of that, I had long hair. But for many years before that, I had short hair. And what's funny is sometimes I see people now who they've just never, who I haven't seen for years, and they've just never seen me with long hair. So yeah, I cut it because I got fed up with it. That's the short answer.
Here's a cool question. What is your favorite NBA star highlight music video? For me, it's Sean Kemp with Pearl Jam Go.
That's a great question. And that's a great selection from you there, Nick, but I would expect no less from you. I'll probably go for something like Jam Session or Rump Shaker. Rump Shaker was a great one because they actually remixed a song of theirs that was, you know, Rex and FX that was out. So that's a really cool one. Some really cool dunks.
I remember some of the songs on that VHS were actually like specifically made for it because the words were slightly different to be more basketball related. I remember spending a huge amount of my childhood trying to find those versions of the songs.
Yeah.
What is your favorite Slam cover and why?
Sorry, just to backtrack, I'm actually going to go for Jam Session, Biggie and Heavy D. That is the best video by far, and also an underrated tune, lesser known, by Biggie Smalls. My favourite Slam cover is probably the White Chocolate cover. I obviously love Everyone Always Tends to Ghost, and so I feel like that's kind of a given. That's in the vault. It's probably the best cover ever. But in terms of my favourite, I love the White Chocolate one because it just exudes everything about Jason Williams at that time, with his toothpick in his mouth, just looking cocky, when he still had the floppy hair before he cut it. It's just a great picture.
Mine are weirdly like really early ones where Larry Johnson, I believe is issue one. Yeah, because it just framed what Slam was for me immediately. And the other one, Stark's Raving Mad, because I was so happy that he'd got a cover. So that was nice. My ones. Mike Miller's final question. Is it true that Sammy was the inspiration for Skilo's I Wish?
No, obviously not. Because otherwise I would have been like 8 years old or whatever it was when that came out. But he definitely inspired me with his lyric, "I'm always last to be picked and in some cases never picked at all," which is obviously what Mike Miller is referring to. So that was my tagline for a few years on my Instagram account as the bench warmer.
And Ben Bean, our guest last week, who is a forgotten 90s player who deserves some love? I think Mark Price deserves more respect. That's a good choice from him, no doubt. Mark Price, kind of somewhere between John Stockton and Steve Nash as a play style, exciting player. Is there anyone you think that we haven't talked about already? Because we've kind of flirted with that topic a little bit. I'll try and think of someone as well. You mentioned the Sonics already. You name dropped Detlef Schrempf already. He was a cool player.
Yeah, another guy I name dropped from that Lakers squad of the late '90s was Nick Van Exel, and he kind of faded a little bit when he went to the Nuggets. But I feel like he was an incredible player as a rookie and in his first few seasons, and really clutch as well. Scored some amazing kind of buzzer beaters and stuff like that. So. Yeah, he doesn't get talked about too often. And he was an all-star and things like that. But yeah, he was a cool player in the 90s.
I'm actually fact-checking myself. Oh, I'm 1 year out. I was hoping to include Stromal Swift in this, but joined in 2000. I was hoping I got at least 1 year of him.
Yeah.
But it's not to be. Someone else who I think Mike Bibby deserves a mention, because he took the mantle of White Chocolate in Sacramento, which felt like an impossible task. And while he was never as flashy or eye-catching, maybe was more influential in the playoff runs they had eventually. So, yeah, I think Mike Bibby probably deserves a shout there.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. He's absolutely massive now. Have you seen him?
Yeah, he's an absolute like tank.
He's like a bodybuilder or something.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it when I first saw it. I thought it was like a Photoshop or something. It was weird.
I did too, yeah. It's nuts. It's nuts.
Yeah. This is one is from Elliot Wade, a.k.a. Hoopin' and Lootin'. If Sammy had to create a 90s boy band based on slam cover stars, who would he pick? Who would be the lead singer? Is there a bad boy or would he go full Westlife?
This is an outrageous, absolutely outrageous question. but I love it. A boy band. This is ridiculous. I'm gonna have to like look up the covers and like make some selections. Obviously, we might not have loads of time for that. Lead singer though. I mean,
Keith Van Horn has to be in there for one thing.
Yeah, Keith Van Horn. He's very kind of NSYNC looking sort of guy.
He's going to be the like Jason Orange or Howard from Take That, who just like was not a real member. They were just also in the gang.
Exactly. I think you got to get Rodman in there. He got a cover, issue 16. So you've got to have Rodman in there. Maybe a bit of, just for the fact that they looked a bit boy bandish on the cover, was Kevin Garnett and Stephon Marbury. You know, I wouldn't have at the time, but only now that I'm looking at it, I'm like, yeah, that is a little bit boy bandish. So yeah, maybe a bit of Showbiz and KG, Keith Van Horn, Dennis Rodman. Lead singer has got to be, put KG up there. Do you know what I mean? He knows what he's doing. He's the lead singer of our 90s slam covers boy band. There you go, Elliot.
I feel like it's quite an aggressive boy band, but
definitely,
I think that's the vibe you're going for.
100%. I mean, the slam covers, you know, everyone was mean mugging on them covers, so everyone was looking quite aggressive as it was. So
even Tim Duncan managed to look a bit menacing.
He did, yeah, in his own sort of solemn sort of way.
So let's move on. This is normally where we pick a game of the week that we're excited to watch. But being 90s week, what I wanted to do is, for younger fans who won't have seen any of these games before, if they were to go down a YouTube or NBA League Pass rabbit hole looking for 90s games, what games, players or playoff series do you recommend they go back and watch?
Oh, man, there's so many. There's so many. I think anything involving Jordan in the playoffs is a must watch. I think the 92 Shrug game was unbelievable, with all the three pointers. The Bulls Phoenix season series in 93 is incredible. The flu game is a must watch from the late 90s. I think some of those early, the kind of 1993 West Coast playoff games were incredible. Thinking of like Lakers Suns, ones where there were kind of big comebacks. I think it was round one maybe or round two, Lakers versus Suns in the 1993 playoffs. Ones like that are just absolutely amazing. And then I think just for pure entertainment, I mean, that it's heartbreaking, but the one I mentioned earlier of the Sonics and the Nuggets 1994. I loved the Sonics, and I still would if they were around now. But that series is crazy, and you just get a bit of insight into the whole hype around Peyton and Kemp. But then see Dikembe Mutombo come through, and they had an amazing that Nuggets team were incredible. Like Robert Pack was just so explosive, and then LaPhonso Ellis, just some really great young players. Yeah, and Robert Pack is probably someone actually who, perhaps going back to earlier, he's perhaps a 90s player who is easily forgotten, but he at some points, you know, in his career was a really exciting and explosive player.
I'll throw out someone who definitely deserves a mention on a 90s show that we haven't talked about yet. And that's young prime David Robinson. Unbelievable. If you watch him in the first part of his career, one of the best 7-foot athletes to ever play in the NBA. Scored 70 plus points in a game. Often just remembered for being the older version who played behind Tim Duncan after his back was kind of held together with sellotape. But yeah, and we get to the end of the 90s show, and predictably, I guess, sorry, not sorry, two Knicks fans talk about the 90s without mentioning Reggie Miller or the Pacers once. So that is an impressive achievement from us. One thing before we go, one thing we always do is we look ahead to the weekend where we get early tip-offs. And this Sunday, we have a triple header at 8:30 p.m., a deliriously nice time to watch NBA basketball in UK terms. We have Sixers at the Bulls, Pistons at the Wolves, and the Nets at the Nuggets. Which of those games, if you had to pick one, are you going to be tuning into? For me, it's obvious. It's Sixers at Bulls, top of the Eastern Conference clash. I want to see it.
I was going to say that one as well. I think
it's the obvious one, to be honest.
It is, and just seeing the Bulls kind of the way they're playing right now is just great. It's just great seeing the Bulls successful again, like being kind of back in the conversation again. I think anyone, especially if you're a 90s NBA fan, you just love to see the Bulls doing well, which they, apart from the Derrick Rose era, didn't really do much following Jordan retiring. So yeah, it's really great to see them back in the conversation. So definitely be tuning into that one.
And like that, the show ends. Thank you for everyone dropping in tonight, or if you're listening back after the fact, thank you very much. Huge thanks to Sammy for joining us tonight. Where can people find you and your various projects on the internet?
So you can come and find me. I am Sammy the Bench Warmer on Instagram. Also on Instagram, you'll find 20raw7. That's 20, the word raw, and then the number 7 for the Channel 4, NBA on Channel 4 project. And then you can also see what I do for Slam on Slam Archive, again on Instagram. So those are the main places you'll find me.
And big thanks, as always, to Captain Kirk. Makes the show happen, engineers everything we have that is good on this show. I just try and hold it together. And like that, good night.
How about I give you a little boom shakalaka?